Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak and Beers.
Brother, this is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paladin.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host,
Randall. Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
Can you hear with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast?
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Reel Down. I'm your host, Jimmy Skinner. With me, as always, is Dan Perry, fresh off a big old win. He's a little modest and doesn't want to talk about it, but we're going to make him spill it a little bit.
Whenever people say, you did great. Thanks.
Dan's got that whole, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah, kinda. I just feel awkward.
No, it's all good, but we're definitely going to get to it. First thing I wanted to say for this episode was thanks for all the feedback that everybody's been messaging me about the bonus episode I did with Drew, which I didn't really do too much of that. I just gave him a place that he could kind of tell his part of the story on. So, but thanks to everybody that listened to that one and hit me up afterwards. That's kind of cool. We don't always get a lot of feedback, even though we want it, even if it's terrible. I'll take any kind of feedback you'll give me. But yeah, enough about that. We're going into this week. We got a great and returning guest. Most of y'all could probably guess it, but as promised, we grabbed the big clean sweep winner from the KBF world, Russ Snyders, who just crushed everybody's dreams and took home everything. So how you doing, Russ?
Doing good, Jimmy. How are you guys doing?
What's up, man?
We're making it.
Get on.
Well, Russ, for anybody that's new to our podcast or new to kayak fishing at all, let everybody know who you are, a little bit about you, how you got into it.
Yeah, my name's Russ Snyders. I live here in Nashville, Tennessee. I actually just moved to Pegram, Tennessee. It's about a half hour west of Nashville. And I've been kayak fishing 6 years now. All three, circuits, Bassmaster, Hobie, and the KBF tournaments.
And he's a humble guy. He's pretty good if you haven't heard about him. Just go look at leaderboards and standings over the last few years.
Understatement of the year.
He's there. Well, how you want to start, Dan? How you want to get into it? Man, you want to talk about you first? You want to talk about Russ first? Do you want to
let's talk
fishing
about
rods?
I do have a bunch of questions about your rods, but we'll start with the national championship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, give us just a quick recap of what the event was and where it was, and then we'll let Russ go into detail on it.
Say what?
Me? Can I hear me? Yeah, you.
Oh, me. National championship, Kentucky Lake, and or feeder creeks connected to it.
And Barkley.
Yeah, and Barkley.
It had a ton of open water.
It did, yeah. Yeah.
Which some folks were happy about, and some folks were not. We're going to talk about that too. Don't you worry. But yeah, so Russ, give us a little bit of a rundown of the Kentucky Lake area, and then kind of like what you were fishing, if it was just because there's so much open water, like we just said, just kind of not where you were, but just kind of what you were fishing.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just this past weekend with the 19th, 20th, 21st of October. It was Lake Barkley, Kentucky Lake, and any of the waterways that feed in, creeks, rivers, all that stuff was in bounds for this one. And it's pretty close to where I live, about an hour to 2 hours, depending on where you go. And like I said, it is a lot of water. A lot of times they'll cut off the boundaries kind of halfway into Kentucky Lake, like right at the I-40 bridge, or at Lake Barkley, they'll cut it off right at Clarksville. So usually those upper ends of the lakes, you know, where you can eventually and get up to the next tailwaters of, I guess on Kentucky Lake, it would be Lake Pickwick, a tailwater of Pickwick, and then Barkley would be tailwater at Cheatham Lake. So all that was in bounds, which also opened up a lot of tributaries. So, you know, with, as you know, a lot of you probably heard, you know, Kentucky Lake and Barkley been in a bit of a recession the last several years. A lot of Asian carp and stuff have moved in, and a lot of the grass has died off, and you know, it's there's still some good fish, you know, in both lakes, but it's definitely tougher than, you know, it's not the old Kentucky Lake days of, you know, 10 years ago where you can go just about anywhere and catch them. Lake was fishing, it's been fishing tough. And, you know, but a lot of the rivers and stuff, you know, feeding in, which, you know, that's kind of what since I moved out here about 10 years ago, I've spent a lot of time on the Duck River, the Buffalo River, and, you know, a lot of the little creeks and rivers that feed into all that is kind of where, you know, my stopping grounds as far as where, when I moved out here, where I started fishing. So, I was excited to see that in bounds, you know, anything that in KBF, you know, the rules are a little different than Hobie and a Bassmaster. And in KBF, as long as you can float down from wherever you're putting in to the lake, then it's considered in bounds. So I did spend, you know, this year I've been pretty busy with the moving in a new place and stuff. And you know, typically I get a couple days to pre-fish, but this tournament, I really, you know, I knew that I had a good chance of doing well, and I blocked off about a week and a half of my schedule and just got all my work done before that. And just wanted to be 100% just focused on exploring some waters that I was already pretty familiar with. But I think this tournament really made me kind of push myself to explore some new areas, you know, that I haven't been to yet. So that was an exciting thing to do. Cody, a good buddy of mine, he came out as well about a week and a half before, and me and him just you know, we'd started doing some river floats and started, we were you know, in the beginning we were kind of like, you'd hit one area and then I would hit an area, and I was kind of being a little quiet about it because I found a couple good spots, and then, you know, then we found ourselves like going back to the same, you know, going to the same river he just hit. And then we kind of got to a point pretty early on where we realized, all right, if we're both going to be fishing this stuff, we just need to be kind of straight up open and honest with each other. Just because if you get too much pressure on those areas, you know, it can really make the fishing a lot of tougher come tournament time. So we kind of mapped everything out. And we're like, all right, these are the areas that we think are going to be most productive. And, yeah, we just started hitting all the skinnier water stuff, and found some, you know, several good areas. And, you know, come as it got closer to tournament, there was quite a bit of, you know, well, the secret wasn't a secret. The secret was out, and I'd say it was probably 25% of the field or so, at least, was fishing, you know, similar areas off the Duck River and stuff like that. There was quite a few other people doing it as well.
So, a quick question for most people that'd be listening to this, they've seen it. Everybody noticed and has heard a little bit of the story about Cody Shiner. After you saying that y'all were trying to keep something secret, you know, at the beginning, you just hit him, didn't you? Y'all got into it and you punched him in the eye, didn't you? You just smacked Cody.
I told you, I found a good area, and he said he was going to fish it. I just wasn't having that. Him in his place, and
so threw his ass off a cliff.
No, he was. We were trying to get under his. We're trying to get to this one area to access a river there, and you had to kind of duck underneath this bridge, and there was a pretty narrow area to walk, maybe 3 feet or so. And from that, it dropped off about 15 feet straight down. And then there was just a bunch of rocks and stuff, you know, kind of dropping down at a 45 after that initial 15-foot fall. And, you know, he's wearing his flip-flops, and he slipped and went straight down and just tumbled. You know, it was really scary. I'm glad he's all right. He got banged up pretty good. He bruised up and cut up his arm, his hip, his side, his head. You know, but luckily, you know, didn't get any concussions, and seems to be doing a lot better now. So it didn't take, you know, a couple of days, and he's right back at it. It's always something with Cody.
Hey, that's committed. You know, anybody thinks getting to your fishing spot's hard? Have you fell off a cliff to get to your spot? He found a quick access straight to the water.
it was a little bit of a grueling week. We're camping the whole time, you know, 10 days or so. Just had a little campsite, and it was getting cold at night down to, it was pretty nice actually the whole week leading up to it. You know, the leaves were beautiful, and it was just really, really pleasant fall out here. But during the tournament was the one big cold front that we had, and it dropped down to, you know, mid to upper 20s for a few of those nights.
Y'all hammock camping?
We did hammock camp once. We did a 25-mile float on a river. A lot of these areas, wow, like we needed to make sure if we put in somewhere that we could float, you know, all the way down. The thing that happened with Drew happened literally as we were out there pre-fishing. As soon as that happened, we're like, we really gotta follow the rules.
cover ourselves.
We're fishing some of these areas way up river. We got to make sure that it flows, you know, all the way to the lake, because if there was somewhere where, you know, there was you know, some rocks or a shoal that was too shallow that we couldn't float over, then everything upstream of that would have been off limits. But in this tournament, you can drag around any kind of temporary obstructions, such as laydowns or logs or stuff like that, as long as you don't get onto private property. So a few times we had to do that, but otherwise, yeah, we did one 25-mile float and camped out in our hammocks, and it was a good time.
That's awesome.
Sweet, man. Living the life.
Yeah.
So a little back up on the tournament. So it was the KBF NC is a like multi-tier event. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but basically there's multiple events going on at once. You have the Trail Series Championship, the overall national championship, and the Challenge Series Championship, as well as they award, Rookie of the Year, Angler of the Year. I think there's a Challenge Series Angler of the Year. So there's a lot going on.
Well, Team Cup, too.
The Team Cup. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
On Dakota Lithium, Stormy put on a team for Dakota Lithium. It was me, Cody, Eric Siddiqui, and Garrett Wade. And we ended up taking that as well. And so there's three tournaments in one. You know, some people are fishing all three. Some people just fishing one. Some people two. I said the national championship was pretty much open to anybody who wanted to fish it, as long as they fish a KBF event. The Challenge Series is where they have the monthly tournaments for each state. It's your five biggest fish over the course of a month, and each state has it. So if you do, you know, well enough in one of those monthly challenges, you can qualify for that. And then the Trail Series is just the national level tournaments that they put on all over the country. So.
It was a lot. There was a ton of people, 249 anglers, according to Fishing Chaos. Could not think of what this is called. So you were entered in, I guess it would technically be four events.
I get with the Team Cup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Four events.
So off the top of your head, and if you don't know, it's fine. What's like that, all the buy-in for all that? Do you know what your total like entry fee was?
I think it was six. I got, and there's also like bonus bucks and stuff like that too, which is just like a side pot type of thing. I think I want to say $615, but I don't know if that includes the Team Cup at all.
Yeah, so that's not terrible. I thought it was going to be like close to $1,000.
So still a lot of money in a week and a half of your time. I mean, that's a massive investment.
You're getting in all of it. Yeah, it's chunk well, of change for sure.
As we'll get to here in a minute, it pays off sometimes. So, but so I don't even know how to really approach this other than you just. So it's a 3-day tournament. The first 2 days is pretty normal for a 2-day fishing tournament, and the top 100 advance to the day three, and then the. Is it the trail series and the challenge series are 2-day only?
Yeah, after 2 days, those end, that's over with. And then moving on to the third day for the national championship, they just take the top 100 out of the 250 that were entered.
Yeah. So I guess tell us about the first 2 days of fishing and how that went. And, you know, just like kind of what you experienced and just however you want to break it down.
Sure. First day I was fishing. It was a tributary off the Duck River, and Cody and I pre-fished it. We did about a 15-mile float, and the water there was really clear, and you know, we could, in most areas, we could see a lot of the fish, and we didn't even spend that much time pre-fishing, you know, actually casting or anything. I would just, you know, because it was a 15-mile float in one day, so there's not really much time to do it anyways, so I just go along and just mark, you know, everywhere where I saw the good fish. And first day of the tournament, I went up there and threw a big swim bait, a mega bass mag draft, threw it all day. Had made maybe a handful of casts with other lures, but every fish that I got was on the mag draft. Probably had over 20 bites, probably 25 bites or so. Some of them would miss it. So I probably caught 12 fish, and my biggest five, you know, it was 97 inches with a 22.5-inch kicker largemouth.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
So I wasn't expecting that. I saw some good fish in that river there, and I knew it had potential. I was going to be happy with 90 inches, but everything kind of just, you know, stars aligned. It went well, and a lot of those fish were hanging out in the same areas where I marked them. So I was able to just kind of skip those dead stretches, you know, and I had to be pretty disciplined about that. Sometimes it just takes a little while to get from spot to spot there. And, but yeah, just kind of through that swim bait where I was seeing the bigger fish, and had five good ones, had a 10-inch lead over Cody. Cody was in second place the first day. Yeah, so that.
Did y'all pre-fished a lot together, but did y'all spread out and separate? Yeah,
We didn't even fish the same water. We kind of just divvied it up and said, I'm going to hit this. A lot of it also depended kind of on the kayak that we were using too.
Right.
You know, Cody had a Hobie with a motor, but it was, you know, really bigger, heavier boat. And then he also had, I think, his new canoe. A paddle kayak, and actually for the first spot he borrowed Drew's ultralight. that was his first time in that. It was a little difficult just to access the areas. He had to walk down a pretty steep hill, and it was a little ways, so he's like, I'm just gonna bring the ultralight. And so he had fun with that. He's a pretty big guy to be in a little tiny kayak like that.
Yeah, I was about to say, Cody's a pretty tall individual to be in that little yeah. bitty thing.
He felt a little cramped in there, I think, but yeah, he had a good day. And that night, Jeff Little from Torquedo, he came out, I think, the Monday, a couple days before the tournament started, one of our pre-fish days on Monday. He came out with Cody and I did some filming, and we actually filmed in the area where I fished day two and day three. So we had a great time, you know, filming and just, yeah, just kind of cluing him in on some of the techniques that I was using. And we were trying not to set the hook on too many fish, but yeah, so you can check out he's got a YouTube video up. His YouTube channel is called the Little Stuff. So you can see the video from Cody and I pre-fishing with him a couple days before the tournament. And then on day two of the tournament, Jeff came back out with me and filmed me as well. Like I said, in the same area where I pre-fished, when he shot the video as well.
And if you haven't, for anybody listening, if you haven't checked out Jeff's YouTube channel, it's really, really good.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Very informative. He's a really good storyteller and just the way he explains things and very, you know, great editor and great at creating all kinds of content. So
what do you think it was going to take before the tournament to win?
I thought it was going to take 90 a day is what I was guessing.
So you were ahead, feeling good.
Or at 97, 93, and then 92.
Wow.
So second day, it was a little bit different. Jeff was filming me. And the first hour and a half, you know, we're fishing pretty much the best area that I found when we were pre-fishing out there. And went an hour and a half without a bite. And just kind of instinctively, I guess, I just said, all right, let's just move down river a little farther. So what we did actually, because of the torpedo, you know, my game plan was to motor down and then work my way back up with the motor. Just the way I was fishing, whether it was throwing the swim baits or the way I caught them day two, a lot of them was just flipping a jig in areas with current, like behind the laydowns and little pockets and stuff like that, where you can flip in, have your jig fall down to the bottom without getting swept away to the current. So a lot of the big root balls and stuff like that on the laydowns, I was really focusing on a lot of that. But the only way you could fish it was going up river. If you're trying to just do a float and float down and cast into it, you'd get swept away and you just wouldn't be able to really fish it efficiently and get the right angles. So like I said, we motored down that second day about 4 miles, didn't get anything. And so, but I wanted to hit that area again. So I didn't want to start working my way back up already and then work down. So I was like, well, let's just go down, you know, another mile or two and then work our way back up. And it seems like a lot of the fish moved down there, which was kind of surprising. We had a little bit of rain a day or two before the tournament, so I felt like the water level came up just a couple, you know, maybe 2-3 inches or so, but I think it was just enough to get a lot of those gizzard shad and a lot of the bass too seemed to get down those shoals into the next hole, because I noticed it was a little deeper too, just because when I was running my torpedo up river before, I'd on the really shallow shoals I'd have to get out because my motor would start hitting, so I'd just drag up the shoals a little bit. But during a tournament, I think I only had to drag up once, you know, most of the times I can just motor right up it. But most fish came on the jig. Got a couple on the swim bait. I don't think they helped me, but I had 93 inches that day anchored by a 22 inch smallmouth.
Yeah.
So we got all
that was nice.
Flipped into a piece of wood and it got hung up in the wood. And I thought for sure it was going to break me off. I could see how big it was and went down in there and was able to grab them. And I was I think tied with the biggest smallmouth I've ever put on a board at least.
What kind of jig were you throwing? Like a actual flipping jig or a pitching jig? Or
it was a
great one you make, huh?
It's one I make, yeah. Okay. It has a little punch. It's a punch skirt, so it's a little 1/2 ounce tungsten pegged with a punch skirt, flipping hook, and I was using a Zoom Super Hog, which I don't really throw a whole heck of a lot, but I'm liking them more and more. It's similar to like a beaver style bait, but it's just got the right size that's kind of in between a smallie beaver and like a full size sweet beaver. So I felt like that.
Just not want all the action? You want
to have a lot of action, just kind of too little flat, doesn't kick a lot. It's more, and with that colder weather, I think that was an important part to
slow down.
Fish, have a little less action on it.
So to help Dan get into the rod talk, I want to know like your rod setup you were throwing the mag draft on, because I'm always curious about that, because I've tried throwing it like on my my actual swim bait rod, and it doesn't weigh enough, in my opinion. It doesn't feel right. But then I've thrown it on some of my heavy gear and it feels like it's too much for it. So I want to know, like, your setup for that and your jig setup.
Okay. Well, usually most times I throw the Magdraptus on there, the iRod Gen 3 junior swim rod, which is a 7'8". And this tournament actually threw it on a different rod, one that you can't get. Actually, it was one of the prototypes for, so I have a signature series rod, the Snyder Sniper, which is a 7'5". And one of the first one in those prototypes was like a little stiffer than the Snyder Sniper. So it was actually a 7'5", a little bit heavy, like I wouldn't say heavy, actually in between medium heavy and heavy. And that was actually, I was liking that a lot for the mag draft, just because I was making shorter casts, and anytime I'm in a river or have a lot of wood or lay downs and stuff like that, I'm not making as long a cast. I like a little bit shorter rod. But I could have got, I mean, that swim bait or the junior swim would have worked well for it still. It's just I used that one also because I was fishing a lot of these the rivers and stuff. There's a lot of overhanging trees and stuff like that. So I kind of limited myself to four rods. Typically I'll have like seven or eight rods, but in this case I only had four. So I wanted to make sure the four that I brought, they were a little more multi-purpose.
Yeah.
Throw a number of different things on it. So that's also why I kind of use that 7'5", because if I, you know, wanted to flip with that rod, either throw a chatterbait or throw some of the, you know, a little bit smaller things, I could do that as well, get away with it. But I was throwing it with 20-pound Seaguar and Vizex on like a 6-3 Quantum Smoke HD reel.
So in the throwing the Magdraft in the you know the creeks and backwaters, is it you're throwing it at like aggressive fish, or are you moving it really quick to get them aggressive, or are you just kind of slow rolling it around them?
So yeah, so I'm throwing the, they make a couple different mag drafts. I'm throwing the Freestyle, which one yeah. has a treble hook on it, and the Freestyle you have to use your own hook.
Yeah, that's the one.
First couple days I was throwing a 6-0 quarter ounce owner beast hook, and obviously worked great the first day. But there was a lot of times, like especially when there's a little more current, when I felt like I just had to reel it a little too fast. Like I had to reel it pretty fast to get that tail kicking right. And because of that, and it was only the quarter ounce, it would kind of come up in the water column a little too high. It wasn't until the third day, actually. I guess after the second day, I kind of thought about it. I'm like, I'm going to try just a little bit heavier, hook. So I went to a 8-0 3/8 ounce owner beast hook. And I think that was definitely a little better way to go. I can fish it a little bit deeper in the current, you know, when I was reeling, it was coming through the water column and at the right level. It wasn't riding too high. So on that third day, I caught the majority of my fish on that mag draft again, fishing the same area that I fished the second day. And I did catch a few flipping, but for some reason that mag draft, I also switched colors. I was throwing a white back shad, which was, I feel like it was working good in the mornings. And then even on the first day that it kind of, you know, I got most of the fish in the morning, I started missing a lot more. And I think they make one called a brownie, which is just kind of a bronze top, I guess, with more of a transparent silver side. Yeah. And I made that change on the third day as well, kind of mid morning, and that instantly I saw a change in how many bites I was getting once I made that change as well.
Do you ever use the like a flashy swimmer with it, or just
yeah I do, like underspin stuff? Maybe the water was a little dirtier and it could have worked. I mean, I don't know, I was thinking, I didn't try it pre-fishing, but I've done it before.
So that's whenever you go to it, and whenever it's,
yeah, that one was the BMC makes like a 7-0, I think 3/8 ounce, make a 6-7-0 BMC. I've used that with that mag draft as well.
I've got a whole list of things to try now, because I've the setups I've got right now are 7-0 with a, I can't remember the brand, but they're 3/8 with a blade on them.
And yeah,
I always feel like if I'm in clear water, I through it three times. I'm like, no, this doesn't look right.
So. Yeah, you should see that more for a little stained water, get a little more vibration, a little flash if they need it. There you go.
Do they hold up? Like, I don't have a lot of bites on them. They hold up.
No, I didn't. Not that one. It's the one next to it. The white back shad on the right down. Yep.
Oh, okay.
That right there is what I caught all of them on the first day. And then in the morning on the third day, that's what I was throwing. And then I made that switch to the brownie. White back was just once the sun got up high and that water cleared quite a bit, actually, just from my time pre-fishing to the tournament. The water temp dropped about 10 degrees, and I think it killed some of the plankton and the algae in the water, because it went from about 2 foot visibility to like 3 or 4 foot visibility. This area I was fishing, you know, day two and day three.
Sweet. I throw the 5-inch a lot for me, you know.
The 5-inch mag draft?
Yeah, well, the spark shad.
Oh, okay, spark shad. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little bit more intimidated by the 6-inch. Maybe it just seems a little bit too big for me. I don't know.
You're throwing it, and you'll be surprised. I caught a lot of fish that are like 13, you know, 12, 13 inches on it. It's surprising, even smallmouth. I don't know how the heck they get it in their mouth, but.
Do you ever do any kind of trailer hook or anything, like, you know, with the braid to a
hook in the back? With some similar ones, not on the mag draft, but on like Ospreys or Huddlestons and stuff like that back in the day. I used to put trailer hooks on those.
Why the mag draft? Why is it? I've thrown a few different ones. Why is that one so good?
The gizzard shad. It all comes down to I think that one does the best job of mimicking the gizzard shad. And we spent a lot of time fishing a lot of creeks and rivers over those 2 weeks. And 90% of the time when we caught big fish, we'd see gizzard shad around. And it was almost every time we saw gizzard shad, like we'd get a couple good ones.
So, that's awesome.
And a lot of those fish, you know, this time of year in those areas, a lot of those fish typically weren't, it's pretty unseasonable to get them, especially some of the smaller, you know, creeks and stuff off of the duck. Usually the duck river this time of year, like, starts going off. And it's because those fish, you know, that are living in the duck, they'll come early spring or mid spring. They'll work them, you know, they'll work their way up these smaller feeder, you know, creeks and stuff to spawn. And they'll spend most of the summer there, but, you know, starting towards late summer, August, September, they eventually start working their way, you know, back into the duck, and they'll winter there. I mean, Duck River in the winter is like really, really, really good. But in the summertime, you can't hardly catch anything. So this year was it was interesting because it was 10 years I've lived here. This is probably the least amount of rain that we've gotten in, you know, a whole year. It's been really dry. And the whole month and a half leading up to the tournament, I don't think there was a big enough rain to get those fish to come down. A lot of them were just trapped up in there.
Yeah.
So we had a couple little rains where the water would come up just a few inches. But typically, a lot of those smaller rivers and stuff, a lot of those fish would be out of there by now. So it's, you know, kind of untypical to get them this time of year in those spots.
That's something that's always kind of like blown my mind fishing smaller waters, is like, you'll get so far up a creek and when you start catching them, you're like, these are probably resident fish, but then you'll go back in the winter and they're not there. And then like, you start putting it together, like you go hit a stretch of it closer to the main lake or that's got like more deeper water, and you'll find them again. And like, it'll blow your mind how far they'll move.
Yeah. It's wild. Yeah. So even during the tournament, I'm convinced that those fish in 2 days moved at least a mile or two, the whole concentration. That's pretty typical in a lot of these rivers too, where you know, you'll fish 10 miles of river and there'll be like 1 mile stretch or one, you know, section where it's several holes maybe, but like a 1 mile stretch where all the fish seem to be concentrated. But the thing is, yeah, you can go back there the next day and that whole concentration fish can move either upriver or downriver as long as they have enough water to do so. And it really opened my eyes. A lot of times when I fish these rivers, I won't fish like consecutive days. You know, I'll go there, fish a stretch, and the next day go somewhere else. But I learned a lot just by hitting a lot of these areas, you know, in a 2 week span, several times. Just seeing how much they move, it really surprised me.
Yeah.
I mean, you're originally from California and now you're fishing creeks. Is there like, what kind of fisherman do you think you are now?
He's humble. I'm going to say he's fucking good one.
California, a couple of my favorite, I'm not going to say the name of it. Not that many people know about them, but they flow into the California Delta, but they're pretty similar, you know, rivers to, you know, what I've been fishing out here off the duck and stuff. Really similar. So a lot of it kind of translated over, you know,
like old float tube type stuff.
I used to use kick boats, yeah, or pontoon boats, whatever you want to call them. There's two, you know, pontoons or air bladders, and you have a little chair in the middle, and it's not like a float tube where you're submerged in the water. So I'm sitting out of the water, but just from my shins down, you know, or in the water, and you have a couple flippers, and you could put oars on them too. But they're great for the, you know, smaller rivers or larger creeks, and really good for just boat positioning. You can sit right there in the seams of the current and just, you know, with one kick of your fin, you could spin around 180 degrees and it's all completely hands-free. So it's, they're a lot of fun. You know, the only difficult thing is like, if you get snagged or something like that, like trying to get back up river, it's definitely easier to paddle up river than the kick. With those fins, but there's a lot of advantages to using those little kick boats, especially if, you know, if you're fishing some faster water, it's only a foot or two deep or something like that. You can just stand up and there's little bars that you put your feet on, but they'll hook onto your legs and you can just stand there and start casting, you know, in the shoals and just sit right back down. You're floating. So at any point,
you gotta try this
anchor system just by standing up. So it's,
I don't need no power pole.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone somewhere strapped a freaking torpedo to one.
Yeah.
There's some redneck somewhere with an 1103 got that bad boy on plane.
I've got one of them. I got a couple big. I got four of those things, and a couple of them have little. They came with just little Minn Kota trolling motors. You know, just like tiller trolling motors. So I probably could put a torpedo.
Well, Jeff Little, if you happen to hear this, I've got your next video, buddy.
Yeah, you'll have to get with Wilderness, do some kind of like hybrid, you know, kayak.
Yeah, I would love that. I mean, they make a couple of like the catamaran style kayaks and stuff, which I guess can be kind of similar.
But Russ is going to have his own signature series kick boat and get it like KBF legal and then go out there and kick everybody's butt in it.
I was talking to Cody, a couple of those creeks, I really wish I had my kick boat. He's like, I think they're legal. I think you could use them. And he got me thinking about it. I'm like, do I want to use a kick boat for this?
Like that would be like, you know, # legend status.
The kayak game would be over. Like, Russ wins. Like, done. Well, but before we moved on, Dan, did you have any more like IROD questions that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I have a bunch here. Just because I know a shop not too far from me sells IROD, so I was going to ask some questions. Like, can you just kind of explain the different series and why you choose? Because I'll kind of go, well, here, I'll just do this. I'll just share my screen.
Okay.
Make it easy for the, you know, so you can sit here and talk through it. I know some people can't see it, but so you got the Quercus, we were talking about before a deal, yeah. And that's like,
we'll start at the bottom. So the lowest price point is the fiber series, kind of like an entry level rod, but still it's $110, but a great rod. I like how it has a little bigger guides, and those are the rods I use for my guide trips and stuff like that. I got, you know, just a bunch of 7 foot medium heavy casting rods and 7 foot medium spinning rods. Just, you know, good solid all-purpose rods, and you know, if they break or something, that's why I use them for my guide trips and going to the creeks and rivers and stuff like that. A lot of times you don't want to bring like your $300 rods, you know, when you're doing river floats.
Definitely not.
And I guess a step up from that is the Gen 3, IROD Genesis 3.
What's the difference between Gen 2 and 3?
There are a little bit. The blanks are a little different. They have better guides on the Gen 3, and they use a different material for the blanks, and the guides, I think, are the two biggest things. And they got the the little hook keeper right above the reel seat. It's a better hook keeper. So other than that, not so much difference. You know, the lengths and the actions are all the same. They got the same reel seat. It's $150. They have a lot of rods in that. You know, my signature series rod, the Snyder Sniper, is in that series. It's a 7'5", medium heavy. And yeah, jeez,
there is a lot of them.
There's a lot.
Good Lord. Yeah.
The one thing about iRod is that
there it is.
Hey, there it is. Yeah. They have more. I mean, Paul Bailey.
It's so good. It's sold out, man.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Russ just got excited, like, hell yeah.
Money. Where's my cut, bitches?
Huh? Yeah, where's my cut?
Yeah.
Is this Taco Warehouse?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to make a post to tell people to go to Taco Warehouse to get them, but now
they're out, man.
Out, so we'll see.
There it's out. So, maybe what are, like, with this one, are they micro guides?
Yeah, so they have micro guides on those, on the iRod Gen 3s. Like I said, similar to the Gen 2, they just came out, they made a few little tweaks on the Gen 3s. Those just came out in a year ago, I'd say. A lot of options, spinning and casting rods.
Yeah.
That's the majority of the rods that I have of iRod, that's what they are.
So that's like the staple.
That's the staple, yeah, yeah. That's the 150, and I think in most rods, I mean, that's about the, you know, the price point of a lot of popular rods, I'd say, for the average,
definitely
average bass, yeah. You know, average tournament fisherman, I guess.
Oh, yeah, like that, I would say that 120 to 200, is that really good? Like, worth your money?
A,
you know,
there's a big difference. I feel like there's a big difference between like a $75 rod and a $150 rod.
Yeah.
There's a big difference, but there's probably a smaller difference between a $150 rod and a $250 rod. It's pretty minimal. There's a way bigger difference from the 75 to 150 than there would be if you were to do 150 to 250.
Yeah. To me, really, once you get to 150, you get more durable and like an actual, like really, a good rod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah.
The biggest for me that I noticed that really would matter for most people going over that 150 and up is a lot of them, they just keep getting lighter. Mm-hmm. And for some people that means a lot. I like a little bit of weight in my hands. I mean, I use Dobbins and
what are you saying here, Jimmy?
But, you know, I've used some of the really, really high end Dobbins and like great rods and super, super lightweight and, you know, really sensitive, but I just like to have that little bit of extra weight in the hand. I don't know.
Balance. That's all, you know, that's the most important thing. Yeah. It's just having that reel seat in the right spot. I feel like makes a big difference.
The crusher looks good.
Yeah. The crusher is a really great rod. It's been out for a while. It has a little bit bigger guides and
different reel seat, huh?
The reel seat, it's a nice reel seat. It comes, you know, comes down the trigger on it is a little bit larger. The Gen 3 has a really small trigger on the reel seat. But those Crusher series are great. I got a few of those. Ron Champion's rod, the what's it called? Croker Crusher. That's Ron Champion signature series rod. That's a great one. It's pretty versatile too, not just for throwing frogs. So the crushers are great. And then another rod that just came out is the Quercus, which is the only iRod series that has cork handles. And I only got one of them. I got the 7'3", but I really, really like all the components and just the design, the reel seat, it's probably my favorite. I'd say that's my favorite out of all of them, mostly just because of the little bit bigger guides, which I like. I'm not a huge fan of micro guides. Just casting like braid to floral leaders through them kind of be a pain.
There's a junior heavy junior swim get you if you're looking for a.
I didn't realize they made it in that cork. Yeah,
there you go.
Oh, and these are a really good price point too.
They are, yeah, and they're really good quality, really, really good guides. I mean, they're great rods.
Oh, dang it.
200 to me is usually like the deal because it's like that. Those are, you know, some I have some less expensive ones for rods that you don't need, you know, that super high end, like a top water, you know, but the rods that you don't need to spend all the money. But for me, 200, like
spinning rods. I mean, if there's one rod to spend a lot of money on, it would be like a finesse, like spinning rod. Anything you're going to like work in plastics, or you need something really light and really sensitive, that's where it doesn't hurt spending some extra money on it, I would say.
What's your go-to eye rod in the spinning? Like what's series?
The Air series. So the Air series is their high end rod. It's $250, and I got a couple of the Air series. Was it 771? Yeah, what are the three? 7.2. Yeah, that 7.2 medium is a really good one, and I have the 6.10 as well. I don't have the 7'3" medium light though. I have that in the Gen 3.
So. Rust, you don't need meds.
I don't throw a lot. I don't throw a lot of spinning rod. I throw Senkos a lot. I'm throwing a spinning rod. It's probably a Senko.
Yeah.
Or
for me, it's a Senko and a drop shot. Like Nico, that's my
or Nico rig sometimes.
Yeah. No shaky. Yeah,
little swim baits. Actually, that's what I throw. Little spark shads. Stuff like that, or little tiny Kitex, something that can move a little faster.
Well, that's really cool. I'm gonna have to do some more looking into these. I didn't realize there was as many options.
A lot of options. Like, so you have Paul Bailey and Matt Newman. Those are the two main guys that are running the company there, and they've always been, they're like swim bait gurus out west. So I'd say iRod makes more swim bait rods. There's more swim bait rods in their lineup than any other rod company, I'm pretty dang sure. I make saltwater. Yeah, those are some of the saltwater rods. For redfish and inshore. They make like an inshore. They make saltwater rods for even, doing tuna fish and stuff like that too.
Jeez.
But down in San Diego, a lot of their saltwater rods that come on a series are
whale's vagina.
Really popular.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. MidwayUSA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Well, that's awesome. Like calico bass and stuff like that, throwing swim baits for those calico bass out in the kelp beds. Made some rods just like specifically designed for that as well.
Well, folks, you've got the definite like rundown here. I definitely say go check them out if you're in the market for something new. And especially like you don't see these as much. Like the only time I'd ever seen them was back when Hook One had them. That was the only person that I had.
The West Coast, they're definitely one of the most popular rods out there. And
yeah,
in Alabama, they sell them at Bucks Island in Gadsden.
Do they? Cool.
Yeah. I'm going to go check them out. Yeah. Maybe I can talk our guys in the shop to throw us an iRod rack up at the store.
That'd be Music City?
Yeah.
Really? That'd be awesome. Yeah.
I'm working on them on that. We're going to carry some local company baits. And
that'd be great.
You know, not a full tackle store, but.
Yeah, it's been, I got, I took my new Wilderness Systems Recon and took it into the Music City Outdoors and just signed on with them a couple weeks ago, right before a national championship. So
perfect timing.
My Recon go down Jimmy. There. And spent a lot of time tricking it all out and got the live scope and the two graphs and.
Yeah, he does. I've never seen a Wilderness as like stacked up as the one that's sitting in our showroom floor right now. Like that bad boy is rigged out.
Cool. Yeah, I've got every little gadget and gizmo and you know, all the bells and whistles on that thing. So
one of our guys was up there and saw it, and he was like, I don't even know, like, I didn't know Russ even uses this stuff. He's like, I always hear about him in the creeks, and he's like, this thing's got two graphs and live scope.
I use the attack and the skinnier backwaters, and I mean, it took me like 8-9 months, I'm not even kidding, to rig that thing up. I wanted to have a boat that I can use the live scope and use offshore and fishing deeper water, but I told myself I was going to do it. Like, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to have it, you know, everything just like really dialed in. I don't want to half-ass anything. And it was a long process of just like every little step of the way to do some modifications and some fabricating. And, you know, I needed to get that torpedo throttle like mounted right next to my hip. So I always use my elbow to kind of push that throttle forward and reverse. And there wasn't a gear track there, so I had to figure out how to put a gear track there, and had to figure out how to, you know,
It's funny you mentioned the elbow thing. So Jeff came up and rigged up foot steering on my boat this week, and he came out there and grabbed me. I was like, look, let's talk about throttle placement. And then he's like, look, I know Russ does this thing with his elbow. He's like, I don't understand that, and I don't know how he does it, but I'm going to say you should not try that. And I was like, no, I'm not that coordinated. I'd have me in reverse so fast going the wrong way.
No, I'm telling you, jump in my kayak and check it out. That's the way to go.
Which live scope did you go with? Garmin?
Oh, the Garmin. It's the 9-inch Garmin. I didn't get the new fan. I bought it on sale right before the new fancy transducer or whatever came out.
Yeah, that's how us poor people get live scope. Yeah. We just get excited for the new version to come out so we can afford the end of the year sales at Cabela's.
Right?
I'm waiting on it to hit right now.
I use it a few times. We went up to a Hobie tournament, the Wolf and the Fox River. After that tournament, a group of us went up and fished some of these lakes up in northern Wisconsin. They're just full of giant smallmouth. And yeah, you could just look at that live scope and just see, you'd see little pods of fish. You just cast right on top of them, let that little jig fall down 20 feet, and almost every time they'd get it. But I'm still learning. You know, a lot of the lakes around here in Tennessee River and a lot of the lakes, the problem is there's so many different kinds of fish, whether it's white bass and, you know, gar and drum. And it's hard to know exactly what you're looking at a lot of times, where
yeah,
some other clear lakes, like those lakes up in Wisconsin, it's like if you saw a fish 90% of the time, it was a bass. So
I'd probably be the guy out there fishing like schools of catfish or something stupid just because I didn't know no better. I want live scope, but I mean, I'm just now starting to really learn my graph, like old school stuff, and yeah. I don't know if it's a good idea for me to add something.
Yeah, distraction. It'll kind of change the way you fish. You got to be disciplined about when not to use it. I feel like that's for sure. That's one thing I've learned from the little bit I have used it. So.
Yeah,
I've said before, I really want 360. Like, I just the way I look at it, like whenever I see pictures of it, like it just makes sense in my brain. I get that that's totally different than live scope, but
I think that's really what Adam has. Cool.
That'd be a big upgrade to me.
Riser, doesn't he have 360?
He's not 360. Yeah.
Oh well, never mind. He's just really good with Humminbird.
yeah, he does something where it reads. I forget what it's called, where you can like read it out in front of you. Kind of.
I've heard him talk about it, and people say it's an old school trick that you could do with the Humminbirds or something like that. Not a lot of people used.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. He's good with his,
his
crafts for sure.
Really good. We've talked about it on here, and Russ, I think you know Trey Johnson.
Yeah.
Trey talked about them going fishing in his bass boat one day, and he said he looked back, Adam's back there punching up stuff on his graph, and he said, it's never been as clear as it was. I never touched it. Like, it just worked after that. But
that's a big part of it. It's just, understanding.
That's why I got rid of the Humminbird, man. It was just too much. Like, I could not dial it in. Garmin and me work very well together, so I'm just going to stick with Garmin.
I'll bet Adam's looking forward to that Dale Hollow event.
Oh yeah, yep. We just talked about it. Yeah,
that really somebody good. Asked me today if I was going to jump in on it, and I was like, "Is Adam fishing?" And they were like, "Yeah." I was like, "Nope, I'm not donating."
That is a little honey hole, man. That place and wintertime, he's tough to beat.
Yeah, he is. Well, so you had a two killer first days. You took home the Trail Series and the Challenge Series Championship with a total of 109 190 inches over the 2 days with some, you know, really, really good fish, including that 22 inch smallmouth. So off the top of your head, do you know like what that netted you money wise? I mean, those, so you, there was holdbacks that they had done throughout the year to literally like boost the pots up. And
it's somewhere a little over 50,000.
Jesus.
By far my biggest payday. Yeah.
And that's for the whole 3 days, right?
That's for everything. Yeah.
Everything.
The team cup. The, I think I got either first or second or second and third big fish. They paid out three big fish. So I don't know. I don't know. I know I got two.
Jesus. So that, well, all right. Taking the rest of the year off, guys.
I know a lot of that, you know, because this is what you do for a living. So you have to, you know, watch your money and all that. But is there like one big splurge you?
I just moved into this house here in Pegram last December, and I don't have a garage. I've had a garage, any place I've ever lived, I've always had a garage, and all I have is a couple, like moving boxes, I guess, like boxes off of like a moving truck type of thing, and they kind of leak a little bit, so I got all my stuff just piled in there, and usually I'm just really organized and just a little OCD when it comes to all that. But this year has been a bit of a challenge because I just don't have a workspace. I don't, everything's just still boxed up and in those little storage containers. So I'm gonna I guess once it gets warm enough, I was hoping to, yeah, I'd love to do it now, but I think I gotta wait, you know, until springtime to pour a slab and get like a little workshop built. So that's the goal. I have a place to, yeah, put all my fish and stuff, my kayaks and all my gear, work on my truck and
6 million different trophies,
yeah, man.
A bunch of big checks. I like it. Well, so just no surprise. You did win the day 3-2 with the overall. And it was, I mean, you stayed out in front pretty much. I mean, Eric Jackson had a really good tournament too. Cody was in third overall, Robert Weicker, Drew Gregory. I mean, all really good names, but you know, you just were really dialed in on that. So you know, one thing I wanted to touch on about it was, and you had mentioned it because of the stuff we've had with that happened with Drew and you know all the fuss that's drawn up, what is your take on, it's two questions, like what's your take on the like pre-fishing periods? Do you, obviously for this one you pre-fished as much as you could because it's within the rule set, I would do the same thing. You know, most people would. Do you think that it should change to there's off limit times to like narrow it up, or do you like having your bodies of water
with them having a set? You know, you only have 5 days, whatever, to pre-fish, and there's an off limits period of a month. And I can see how a lot of people would have certain locals, like in this case, I'm being honest, like. This was a tournament. Some tournaments, it doesn't matter. You can be out there 2 weeks and literally a ton of pre-fishing could hurt you more than it could help you.
Right.
Just condition change. Or
Just because things change. In this case, because of the type of waters that I was fishing, I knew those fish weren't going to go anywhere. I mean, conditions could change, but I knew it was a matter of just like how much, you know, the more time I could put into exploring a lot of these areas, the more it was going to put the odds in my favor, and also the more, you know, spots I was going to be able to between me and Cody, we had a number of different areas to fish. And I think that was, you know, some of these areas, the area I fished the first day, Drew Gregory hit it the second day and he only got 80 inches out of it. And,
Drew.
I owe him to be honest. Cause I told, you know, I had a feeling he found it and I talked to him about it, and he, you know, without mentioning it, he's like, well, how about, you know, you take it the first day and then leave it for me day two and day three. And I'm like, all right, that works. So I feel like I got a little, the better end of the deal on that one. And it was nice of Drew to do that. But like I said, yeah, just, you know, some of these areas are a lot more susceptible to pressure, and at the same time, having, you know, that amount of time to pre-fish and find these areas, what was it was an advantage. I'm not going to lie about it. Like that was why I did well in that tournament. That's why I set that much time up before, because I knew that it would make a difference.
Yeah. It would benefit. And again, there's no rules that you were breaking, and it's,
yeah.
Like, it was all, competition's all about any advantage.
About it just cause it's, I mean, that's, if I had a one you know, if I had a choice to do any kind of fishing anywhere, it would be going to those creeks and rivers that I fish and trying to catch big smallmouth. I mean, that's my absolute favorite thing to do. So the fact that I can, you know, one, pre-fish these areas and explore more areas, you know, that I still hadn't explored yet, that were, you know, going to be spots that I'm going to be able to go back to now and, you know, and hit on my free time too. So I was just excited about, yeah, doing some exploring.
Because you just said that, you know, that being what you want to do, what is your thoughts on the demand for the rule changes that you're seeing with some people? And like,
wasn't it some with like communication on
the communication on and off the water, and then everybody wanting to pull the boundaries in, change the rules,
launches. I mean, I can see I feel, you know, with the way the rules are now, the people I have at the toughest are the tournament directors and just trying to manage all that. I feel for AJ and Chad, and because it's got to be just a pain in the ass to have, you know, all these, just have so many questions as far as like launch areas, whether it's, you know, is this legal to launch, is this, you know, or just with boundaries and stuff like that, just creates a lot of headaches. So you know, you either gotta, so I can see why they're going to like the set launch, you know, set launch points or whatever. I can understand why they're doing that, because as a tournament director, it would definitely make things a little easier to navigate.
Just go as far as you want, as long as you launch from there.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's just a debate whether, you know, in the Hobie and the Bassmaster series, you can't get out of your kayak. So you can't, you know, it kind of restricts you from fishing some of those rivers and creeks and stuff like that. So it's pretty much.
Well, what's your thought on that though? Does it, like, for me, and I said it on the episode I did with Drew, for me, it just takes like kayaking out of kayak fishing.
I was talking to Chad. He's still trying to, you know, figure out what he wants to make everyone happy. I know. And you know, there's a lot of people that love getting in those skinny waters. I mean, that's the essence of what kayak fishing is all about, is to get into these areas that boats can't get into. But at the same time, like, you got to kind of figure out, you either got to have, you know, a strict boundary like Hobie does it, or you just got to say like no boundaries, as long as it's, you know,
right.
You can get as far up a creek as you want, get out of your kayak and wade and do, you know, carry over shoals, or just, you know, if it connects somehow, I don't know, that's a way too, which would just make it easier where there is no boundaries, as long as it's connected. Or you have a hard boundary like Hobie. But if you try to have, you know, if you, at some point in all these creeks, there's going to become a point, if you get up high enough, there's going to be an area that you can't float down, that's going to be too skinny. But it's just a matter of how do you really prove where that point is, you know, if you're, you know, sitting behind a computer or whatever, judging fish and stuff, and you see somebody caught a fish way the heck up there. I mean, who knows, you know, if that's hard to tell if that's in pounds or not, unless you're the actual person that's there, you know? I mean, for every single, I mean, because of that, throughout my pre-fishing and the tournament, every single day, I had a video camera go. I had a bunch of micro SD cards. I documented every single day for 2 weeks. Every day I was out there on the water, because if I ended up fishing an area and somebody said that's not, you know, within the boundaries, I could show them a whole day's worth of footage of me floating down the whole stretch. And there were some areas where it was skinny, you know, it was just a few inches deep and you're still floating over. But if it was just a little bit less water, then it would have been out of bounds. A few areas we saw like that. So,
Yeah. That's it's a hot topic right now. I just wanted to bring it up and get your take on it. We talked about it pretty good. And then like my stand on it is, I don't think everybody should have to be worried about changing these rules. I think these rules work great for KBF. And if there's no big complaints in that and Chad and their crew can handle it, then let it be. And then like, if, you know, everybody wants, you know, Hobie to run their rule set, then run your rule set, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't think everybody we don't all need to have all these tournaments have all the same things. Like, it's nice that there are different places you can go and do it in different, rule sets. Because, like, KBF,
the KBFs and the Bassmaster, you do, you know, it's hard to make everybody happy, but at least,
yep,
as long as it's not all the same, at least there's like options. You're like, well, I kind of like this better, so I'm going to fish these tournaments, or I kind of like this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's
having some differences, I think.
But that's the most of the reason I haven't fished a Hobie yet. That, and like, I know for 2 years in a row, every time they scheduled a tournament, it's the weekend I have my kid, and I wasn't going to, you know, change that around. But, you know, I was going to fish the one on Pickwick, and then I like went into my area and similar situations to what Drew found. Do I think it was legal? Yeah. But it's like, do you want to chance that and then have a great day and then lose off a technicality, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, you just float that line. And yeah. I just don't like doing that. So,
yeah.
But no, that's a
That's a part I don't like, is that somebody like Drew in that situation, he decided to go for it, and you didn't. But because there's gray, you know, the gray made it unfair in my mind. You know, that's all I want taken out, is take out some of the gray.
Yeah. Get more descriptive with the rules, you know.
That's the biggest thing. It's just the wordage and the description, because there's so many different variables and different scenarios. Sometimes there's not like a. Yeah, I think Chad had to, even before the tournament, he had to kind of explain, and you know, because there's so many people fishing the creeks and rivers and stuff, he had to try to clear things up and give some explanation of what's allowed and what's not allowed.
I would be fine with a rule that would go with what you did. Like, if you plan on fishing an area that may, you know, may be questionable, film the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like if this is what you want to do, okay, you need to go spend some money on a little bit extra SD cards and record the whole thing, and we can verify that, you know, uncut, unedited.
Since that Hobie tournament last year, I got disqualified, or I had to disqualify myself. Since then, I've run a camera in tournaments every day, just in case something happens.
Yeah.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Well, man, you clean sweeped it, dude. You did killer. I mean, 282 inches over 3 days. That's just insane. Dang. Took home national championship, trail series championship, team cup championship, challenge series championship. You just everything. And congrats on that.
Thanks,
I guess that's it's a good ending to this year, and definitely a nice...
I'm ending it. I got the Hobie TOC.
That's right. I keep forgetting that one because I don't hear it talking about.
I got another chance. I'm coming after that one too. We'll see.
And that's on, where's that one at?
That's Caddo Lake, Louisiana, kind of on the border of Louisiana and Texas, just outside of Shreveport. There's only 50 guys. It was $45,000 for first on that one.
You got some good experience down there?
I've been there. This will be my third time there. Yeah, I know it pretty well, but there's going to be, it's a pretty stacked field for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have your money on anybody?
Is it Cody?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah. Especially since you kind of put him in the back seat in his place at this one. I feel like he's coming for you even more.
If we end up fishing, I think he's going to get first pick. If we end up first tree fishing together.
Like, you only won 45.
He had a good day too. I think he won over 20 grand and
yeah,
championship as well between all
and he took home the Angler of the Year
and got Angler of the Year. So I mean,
and I was gonna get him invite him on tonight too, and I decided we're coming into the off season, obviously, like the TOC is next, but
yeah,
this is when we get to kind of play around with our shows. So I decided we're just gonna give him his own show to talk about his whole year and talk about that. But cool. So everybody listening, stick around for that. That'll be coming up soon. But yeah, man. So is there we're gonna get to Dan here for a second to talk about his but is there anything else you wanted to say on the KBFNC or anything like that?
I want to congratulate Dan for all his success. And was it Chickamauga that you were just saying?
Yeah.
And you've never been there before, right?
No.
Daniel, you haven't?
No.
Dang. Is it your new favorite lake? Or how do you
I love TVA. It just worked out in my favor. Like, you know, Jordan's on the team and he knows it so well. He was like giving everybody different areas to go. I was like, I don't know, I like this area. This looks good to me. And I went there and I just landed on them. And
how are you catching your fish?
Well, during practice it was a little bit of everything, but just kind of junk fishing is pretty difficult out there. And so just, you know, frog, I mean, everything from wacky rig to a frog, I mean, it's, you know, everything in between. Kind of the main thing I found was whenever the sun came up, they were sitting in, the water was down so low that the pockets, the shallow pockets where you wanted to go back and fish in the grass, which, you know, late October, Chickamauga, that's what I was thinking initially going would be grass, frog, blah, blah, blah. And the pockets were, the water had dropped so much that the pockets, there just wasn't enough water in there. So whenever the sun was out, the fish were really sitting outside of the pockets and isolated clumps of grass. And then we get in there whenever the sun came up. So I was catching them on a small, because a bait fish are so small, Yuzuri Radlin Vibe, a 3/8 ounce small lipless. Cool. And that's how I was catching them a lot. And then whenever tournament day rolled around, it was also a secondary pattern was those pockets leading back into the pockets right at the mouth of the Define Creek channel going back into them. Is where some of the fish had pulled out to. So they were just kind of hanging out there waiting. And I went, the first couple spots I went to, kind of where I caught fish during practice, I thought it would be, you know, it'd be good. And there was nothing there. And then I go to this one pocket and I catch the first one was like a, I don't know, a 19. And it was a Define Creek channel going back into a pocket. And then I catch an 18. And then I just start kind of doing a rotation, a couple of misses on a frog up in the grass, because eventually whenever the sun really came up, they moved from that Define Creek channel up into the grass. And I was just kind of doing a rotation in this big giant pocket. And then I caught a 20 and a 21 on a frog. And then that eventually died off. And I went to a few different areas, points, and some, like I was saying, isolated grass with a lipless and yeah, a couple small ones. And at the very end, I caught one on a bluff wall on a wacky rig, and that was 17. So,
and you, what was your best three? Your best five?
96 and a quarter.
Yeah.
In that tournament, though, there was it a five fish limit tournament, or was
it? It's 10 for a 10 per team.
10 per team. Okay. Because I saw some people had more than five, and I saw you had five. I'm like, well, you got five. You got five.
The right. Yeah. You can catch a bunch. I mean, okay. You know, however many you catch, you can put up on the board. Eight. But a lot of times by the end of the day, those fish will get culled down. So they at one point, they'll be in the stringer, and then they'll kind of get taken out of it.
Gotcha.
So five of my fish went towards the 10 fish stringer.
Gotcha. So your whole
around your team, whole. Jordan Marshall and a few others.
Yeah, we had seven out of eight people on our team actually went, and we all stayed in a house at Blue Water Creek Marina. If you're ever up there, that place is awesome. Cool. And we just kind of said, well, whoever does the best is going to be the four people that fish, because you have four starters for each tournament. And I can't say it. They brought four people: is Derek Brundle, Matthew Conant, Ken Wood and D'Addario. I can't say his last name.
Joseph.
Yeah, there you go. Joe D'Addario.
Yeah, that's a good team right there.
Oh, yeah, dude. And they won last year. It was the same four guys that went last year, and they won at Onchick. And for the four people that actually made it for us were me, Jordan, Coley McGowan, and Joe McElroy. And then we also had Chuck Wise, Lance Coley, and Nick Dyer. Their practices just – their information helped us, but their practices weren't as good. So yeah, they did help us, and the days that we were out on the water for the day we were out on the water for a tournament, I've got like hundreds of pictures Chuck took of me. So it was like having my own, like Jeff did for you during your tournament. That's what Chuck did for me. Yeah. Took pictures. And you know, like me and Chuck are boys. We hang out, we fish, you know, me and him share a lot of stuff. And he's my Cody. He's my Cody to you, I guess.
So in the KFLs, are you allowed to communicate on the water during the tournament?
Yeah, total.
Do you guys do that quite a bit, like working as a team like that?
I don't, because other people's information messes me up, but I'm happy to give it out. If somebody calls me, I'll tell them what's going on, but it's almost impossible for me to take somebody's information the day I'm on the water and actually process that and make it work. It'll just be like, well, what the hell, didn't I figure that out? Why are they catching them? I'm not, you know.
How do you guys, because that's a big one of the big rule changes that's coming to next year, it sounds like, with all the tournaments. So Bassmasters has already been like that, but how do you guys feel about the rule changes for KBF and Hobie going to no communication on the water?
I don't think I feel like you should be able to do whatever you want as long as it's, you know, in tournament with competitors.
Obviously not. Top
right.
Non-competitors is,
But, and then I think back to it though, but like, I can't tell you the last time I actually did that. Like where someone called me and was like, hey, they're on a, you know, black and blue Cinco. You should be throwing that. You know, I talk to people as we pass by on the water, but so I don't know if, like, for me, it really changes anything. And I feel like it's probably true for some, or a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
Now I want to know how they enforce that.
Bassmasters has always done it for all their tournaments. They never, you know, you can't do any on the water communicating.
And I mean, what's the only way that they test you for that though? A polygraph,
your call log, or take a lie detector? I mean, if you know, there's a lot of
wood. Good point.
That's what lie detector tests are for. You know,
I think it's like in the KFL, it's a team sport, but that's what makes it the great part about it. Sharing information, like whenever I go back to the room during practice and I'm staying with other guys from the team, we share all the information. And you learn, in the 2 years I fished KFL, I've said this a couple times, I've learned so much more. I truly feel like I've become a better angler because, like, we have creek guys or, you know, live scope. Chuck's a live scope guy. And I get all these different perspectives of how they broke down the water, why they fished where they did, and how they caught fish in ways that I didn't. And then I see that against what I did and what they did better and what maybe I did better sometimes. So for me, it's been a great learning thing, but because that's a team environment, I think that calling people is okay. I would be on the side of, I prefer people not calling in a national event just because it's individual. The only negative to that is I don't know how you, whenever you're doing a float or things, you know.
I'm almost surprised. I mean, there's times, a lot of, I'd say it's like 50-50. I'd say half of the time when I'm doing tournaments, I won't talk to a person all day. It's pretty common. And I'd say that or half of the time, you know, I will talk to them. Most of the time, I guess when I'm struggling more to just, as like a sounding board, I guess, to just me talking out loud and kind of figuring out things or just bouncing ideas more so than to call to see, oh, what are they biting on, you know, and actually do what somebody else is doing. But it's more just like having somebody just to talk your way through something, to kind of just talking out loud sometimes just gives you to just think outside the box or just to get a little more
creative. I mean, one thing that
I could totally see how, like, with them changing the rules to saying no communication. I have nothing against that, and I could totally see why some people don't like that, and I'd be perfectly okay with.
I think it's kind of a learned skill too. Like, you've learned over time, you know, like on the Elite Series, those guys, they share information whenever they go back to the room, and they help. Like, Brian knew, I forget whenever he's, maybe it's down on St. John's this year, where he was saying, yeah, me and my buddy, he knows that once I've caught my limit, he can have my spot, because our number one goal is for each other to get a check. Mm-hmm. I think that that's, you know, that's good, but they do it without communicating whenever they're on the water.
Okay.
So I think that there's still ways to kind of do it. I mean, it's obviously tougher in a kayak to get to one spot to another, but I think, like, it sounds like it would be a big, big change because you can't call each other, but you can communicate so much before and, you know, during practice days and all that, that you know.
Yeah. I think I know there's been a little criticism just with some of the folks saying, like, the Dakota Lithium house, you know, Dakota Lithium will, for some of the,
I've heard that
the anglers, yeah, who are sponsored by them, they'll pay for our housing and our lodging. Yeah. And there's been some criticism, I guess, because a lot of those anglers that say they were some of the top anglers, and it's like, oh, everybody's helping her, they're all working together as a team. And there's, like, some truth to that, I guess, but at the same time, like, a lot of times sharing that information, like, there's a lot of times being in a house with that many other good anglers has hurt me just as many times as it's helped me.
I'm telling you, I that's the feeling I got being in Texas with you guys, like, really? Hearing you talk about it, and Bip and Josh and everybody, I was like, oh my god, what part of information do I? And it just, like, you're just like,
sometimes it's too much. Yeah, it can hurt you or help you for sure. Sometimes it's hurt me, sometimes it's helped me. And but the one thing I'm you know, for the people that give criticism to that, I do think it's, I don't know if it's right, because any, whether it's the Dakota house or any other place that I've stayed with any group of anglers, there's, you know, 3, 4, 5 people all, you know, splitting on an Airbnb. It's the same exact conversations, the same exact thing that's going on. Yeah. That's, you know, it's almost impossible to be in a room with 3, 4, 5 other tournament anglers, and just everybody's just talking about, you know, not talking about
fishing.
Like, it's inevitable. Like, that's going to happen. I don't know.
Like, most of the time, I don't want to hear it. I mean, to be honest,
a lot of time, yeah, there's times where I tell people, I'm like, don't tell me, I don't want to know where you're fishing. I'll tell people in that house, like, do not tell me where you're fishing, because sometimes you get 6, 7 people in the house, and this person's like, oh, I'm fishing here, and then next thing you know, like, there's nowhere to fish because everybody claimed their spot, you know.
Yeah,
there's times we gotta, and those are things we gotta all kind of, whenever you stay in a house with a group, you got to kind of navigate those circumstances.
I don't mind the whole no calling thing, and I think that we will see a lot of that change, but at the same time, like, I can share, me and Russ could tell me exactly what he's doing, exactly where he's doing it, and exactly what bait he's using it, and I'm still not going to catch those damn fish. I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, you got to go catch them yourself.
Yeah,
you know, maybe some of it's fueled by a little bit of jealousy, because maybe, like, you don't have that big team of top anglers to, you know, bounce information off of, but go make better friends or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Plenty of people are talking shit about Dakota House because they want to be in the Dakota House.
I mean, I want somebody to pay for my stay too. Like, but no, it's whatever. It'll be really fun to see what happens in this off season, coming into schedule releases and big rule changes.
The biggest thing is the tournament director. You know, they're doing their best to try to make everyone happy, and you know, that's probably impossible to make everybody happy. You know,
those poor people.
Yeah, AJ and Chad. You know, and they're doing their best to try to just listen to what everybody's saying and make it fun. You know,
so, and there's big stuff coming for bass too.
I've heard. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's been announced, or I know some stuff. But
everybody knows. It's okay. Steve.
Steve, I was running. Okay.
So, no, I've heard it from, like,
literally a dozen people.
If I had to put my money on it right now, that's what I would be saying.
Yeah. No, Steve-O's going to be running things next year. I don't know if that was out there yet, but I'm really excited about Steve-O's awesome guys, one of the best friends, and he's he does a great job running tournaments, and I'm really looking forward to jump in some of those Bassmaster events next year too.
That's my goal. I have limited vacation time. I don't live that rust life, but I'm planning on fishing all the bass ones next year.
I think I'm going to go the Scott Butcher route, open up a media business. I'm just going to follow some of y'all around and get y'all some killer footage. Cause I'm way better with cameras than fishing here lately. So, so congrats on all your success in that one, and good luck to you coming up in the TOC down on Caddo. And Dan, since you're so modest, Dan's team took home the championship, took home a big payday from that one, like $30,000 that they splitting up between everybody. And you got MVP of that event, dude. That's sick. So, he won't say nothing other than nod his little head over there. So, but good job, dude.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, Russ, is there, like always, anybody you want to thank that helps make fishing easier for you?
Iron Rod!
Iron Rod, Yak-Tech, Torquedo, Dakota Lithium, Music City Outdoors,
Wilderness
Outdoors, Wilderness Systems. I think that's all of them.
Heck yeah. Well, anything else?
Guys, too, for having me on. I really enjoy talking to you guys.
It's always a fun conversation. Anytime. We always take something away from it and learn something. And you, Adam, and Cody are probably like my three favorite people to have on, because it's always a good story. I wish we could have had Cody on like full blackout.
We had Adam. He's in another room. I'll go grab
him. No,
we don't. I forgot about him.
He didn't win. He didn't get.
After he wins that Dale Hollow
event. I was fixing to say, we'll save that for a couple weeks or a month or whatever it is, and he'll be on for that one. But
you got to earn it, Adam.
Is there anything else, Dano?
No, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, Russ, we appreciate it.
Up with hope, down with dope.
What?
Nothing.
Up with hope and down with dope. Is that what you said?
Dope's cool too, though. So.
All right. Well, Russ, we appreciate it. We'll let you get out of here, man. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Take it easy. See you soon.
All right. Another great episode. I can't imagine what it's like to win 50 G's fishing.
I want to know what it's like.
Me too. I just keep trying to tell myself that one day, like, all of my bad luck is going to equal one giant just freaking win, whether it's like the Powerball or fishing. Honestly, I feel like I have more chance of hitting the Powerball than a big fishing tournament win.
Dude, I got some scratchers coming home from Chickamauga in Georgia. You know, I hit like the little tip of Georgia.
Apparently, there was a $2 million numbers hit at Florabama at the club or the bar right there. Somebody bought from the Florabama buy station and won $2 million.
Like, yeah, they're probably like, on a scratcher or like a...
No, it was... So it's not... I don't know all the details of how the Powerball and the Mega Millions work, but there's like multiple ways you can win. And as the pot gets bigger, those smaller wins get bigger as well. So it was a smaller win, but it was still $2 million. So after the government gets their half, you get like $30.
One day, Jimmy.
One day.
We'll be one of those people.
Well, we got real quick. I got five tournaments to go over here. Ooh. So we'll get to it. First up, the Queen City Kayak Bass Fishing event on the Carolina Clash Lake. Oh, it was the Carolina Clash Lake Norman, Mountain Island Lake, and Lake Wiley. 89 anglers with their infamous four fish limit. Jeremy Heath with 75 and a quarter for the win there. Adam Fillmore, 70 and three quarters for second. And Tyler Smith with 69 and a half for third. Nick, next up's the Mid-Atlantic Kayak Bass Fishing stop on Delaware, their final event. That's all it says, on Delaware. Any body of water, public access on Delaware. Okay. 25 anglers, five fish limit. First place, Gordy Killen with 83 and three quarters. Second place, Mike Russell, 82 and a half. And there's a typo because apparently Gordy got first. Oh, no. There's a Gordy Killen and a Gordon Killen. So Gordy was first and Gordon was third. So congrats on that. Delaware Paddle Sports Kayak Bass Fishing Series. Oh, it was the same. There were two events going on, same winners for both. Sorry, I should have read into that one a little further. Next up is the Well, this is one I haven't heard of. The Food Allergy Kayak Bass Tournament on Party Reservoir. All proceeds are donated to the Sean N. Parker Center for Food and Asthma Research at Stanford. 51 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, Pua Yang with 76.5. Second place, Joseph Tax with 75.25. And third place, York Cell with 74.25. And last up's the Urban Angler Club of Los Angeles on Puddingstone Lake. 36 anglers, 5 fish limit. First place, Jonathan DeMonet with 86.25, the only angler to catch a limit. Second place, Joey Aquino with 77.75. And third place, Michael Leonis with 47.25. And that is it for the tournament, folks. Another great show. We'll be back next week. And I don't know who we're going to get next week. We may get see if we can get Cody on to talk about the KBF AOI and Russ punching him in the face. I don't know. We'll find something.
Take that, Cody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it worked out. Backed it up.
Cody's lanky, though. I wouldn't want to mess with that dude either. He's probably got a long reach.
I don't know why. I just look
at him. Got a gab on him.
I feel like he's like a jujitsu guy. Like, I feel like he'd wrap you up like a freaking spider monkey and choke you out. And just
I could see that dude in a gi for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Well, all right, guys. It's been another great episode. Dan, thanks for joining me. And as always, you got anything else, Bubba?
No. I talked to a new sponsor tonight, so we'll see.
Oh,
I got stuff in the works.
There you go. Actually, I did too. I need to talk about them, but we'll save that for next show. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next time, and we are out. Peace.
Later.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.